following message is from Church of Christ the King, based in Brighton and Hove in the UK. For more information about us, visit our website, cck.org.uk.
Great. It's a good time tonight, isn't it? You enjoying it? It's fun. I'm going to speak from John's Gospel, John 4, Jesus' encounter with the Samaritan woman, from verse 7. If you haven't got a Bible, don't worry at all. The words will just come up on screen. No problem at all. So here we go. John 4, verse 7 onwards. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" And the Samaritan woman said to him, "You're a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink?" Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it was that asked you for a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." "Sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw, and the well is deep. Where can we get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his flock herds?" Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I give him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so I don't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water." He told her, "Go call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she replies. Jesus said to her, "You're right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you've had five husbands, and the man you are now with is not your husband. What you've just said is quite true." "Sir," the woman said, "I can see you're a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." Jesus declared, "Believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for they're the kind of worshippers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshippers must worship in spirit and truth." The woman said, "I know the Messiah called the Christ is coming. When he comes, he'll explain everything to us." Then Jesus declared, "I who speak to you am he." Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to her town and said to the people, "Come, see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ?" They came out of the town and made their way toward him. Many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. This passage is all about Jesus' offer of salvation. And I think that Jesus is actually trying to teach us four things about his offer of salvation here tonight. Number one, that it's absolutely free. Two, it satisfies. Three, salvation is a process. And four, how salvation can be received. So, number one, it's free, it satisfies, it's a process, and how ultimately salvation can be received. First point I want to make is that salvation is free. Jesus says to the woman, "If you only knew the gift of God." Now, in order for Jesus to offer this free gift of salvation to this Samaritan woman, he first of all removes every single barrier that would stop him from getting in the way of making that offer of salvation. Every social, every cultural, every moral barrier, Jesus removes every single one in the process of having this conversation with this Samaritan woman. It's quite remarkable. He removes the social barrier. Back then, the Samaritans and the Jews were kind of at loggerheads because, well, the Samaritans have taken Judaism and kind of mixed it with paganism. So there's the social barrier. There's also the cultural barrier because back then, well, men and women weren't supposed to speak to one another in public. It was kind of a bit of a taboo subject, if you like. So Jesus is breaking down the cultural barrier as well. He's also breaking down the moral barrier. Five husbands, man that you're with now isn't your husband, you're sleeping with him. Jesus is cutting right through social, moral, cultural barriers. And I honestly, genuinely believe that people in Brighton By the way, we're part of this Welcome Home. This is the last part of this Welcome Home series. So part of this message is going to be about speaking kind of the heart of the gospel, at the same time speaking to anybody here who are Christians, thinking about, well, what do I do in terms of inviting my friends to Jesus and all that kind of stuff. So I'm hoping that this will be useful to you along the way as well. But obviously many Brightonians put up kind of barriers that get in the way. Well, so can Christians too, can't they? And what Jesus is actually saying here is, I want you to remove every single barrier that could stop you from getting in the way of offering this salvation to any Brightonian that's here. You're going to have to leave your social, cultural, moral barriers at the door, my friends, if you genuinely want to see salvation in this place of Brighton. Or what, the way that a person looks, or their educational background, how smart they are, or how the fact that they haven't had much education, or their career, or their financial situation. Dare I say it, the number of sexual partners they've had, or even their sexual orientation. We've got to leave absolutely every one of these barriers at the door. We can't afford in this great city to be taking the moral high ground. We really can't. We get so many other obstacles that get in the way, but as Christians, we can't allow that to happen, to be reaching a bunch of people that really need to hear about Jesus, can we? You know, I can't afford to take the moral high ground either. You know, I'm part of a snooker team, and we play on a Monday night, and in my team, we've got we've got an atheist, two agnostics, a pluralist, and a moralist. Yeah, that's right. And that's another story. I'll tell you about that later on, but not tonight. And anyway, we're in the Castle Club down Preston Street one night, part of the team, we're all amongst us, and the place is packed. And I don't know if you've ever been down Preston Street, it's really hard to park. So in comes this guy into the club and shouts to everyone there, "Traffic warden!" About half of the blokes all run out of the club to move their car. Obviously, they parked illegally, and some of my team have gone out there, and I'm thinking, yeah, but how can I take the moral high ground? Because if you only knew my personal background, I guess I've got a similar background to this Samaritan woman. I've come from nowhere, it seems, and I'm up here, and it's simply because of the grace of God that I've had this offer of salvation given to me. I've received it, and I'm up here sharing about it. It's by grace. It's wonderful, wonderful news. And I wonder if you've ever had a bad experience where someone's tried to take the moral high ground with you. Have you had that when they've been trying to share their faith? It's quite a nasty experience, isn't it? It really is. You know, where they've taken the moral high ground, or, I don't know, maybe they're seeing you as something like their pet project. Maybe they feel like they've got to share their faith about Jesus because maybe someone up the platform has said, you must share it, and they're responding in some kind of fear or something like that. Or maybe even that their project, if they're thinking, if I can get this person to church, then in front of a whole bunch of people, I'll look really good and that'll be amazing. I've heard it said sometimes, well, you're under commission, aren't you? Maybe, Phil, you're under commission here for maybe when you do an appeal later on tonight, for the amount of people that raise their hands and respond to Jesus Christ, depending on the numbers that respond, that'll be the bonuses that you get as a result of tonight as the evangelist in the church. Forget it. That's not why I'm here. I want you to know that. If you're here for the first time and you're a bit worried and nervous, who is this guy? Is he a little bit of a salesman or anything like that? I'm not. I'm just coming from the same background as you with a story to share that Jesus transforms lives. You see, you know, when we've got that kind of experience where, I don't know, someone's taking the moral high ground or it's out of fear or guilt or maybe they're trying to gain brownie points by looking good elsewhere amongst the other church members. So they're placarded and say, he's amazing, look at him. He's bringing in 50 people today. And you're all doing it. You're doing it out of, oh, I don't know, to look good. Well, it's a bitter experience, isn't it? But when you're the subject of gracious good newsing, Oh, it's glorious. It's the most beautiful thing. But also it's challenging, by the way. And this gospel message is challenging. It really is. More on that a little bit later. Because we can think in terms of this morality, we can think, if I work really hard, we can think that this is what Christianity in a nutshell is. If I work really hard and I'm really, really moral, then Jesus has to save me. I'm like a taxpayer with rights. It's my right to be saved. Jesus Christ, however, turns that completely on its head and says, no, salvation is a gift. Your morality does not contribute at all to your salvation. It's to be received. Why is that challenging? It's challenging because it challenges our pride, because we're self-sufficient. First point I want to make, salvation is free. It's not a bitter experience, it's gracious good newsing, but it's also challenging because it challenges your pride. And maybe you're coming here tonight thinking that Christianity is about keeping the moral rules. No, it's about heart change. Jesus kind of said that salvation, you cannot add to your salvation through your own morality. Well, it's a gift of grace. Salvation's free. Second point I want to make is that salvation satisfies. It satisfies. Our bodies are made up of 50% of water, and we need water in order to survive. And Jesus is using a very similar metaphor here. He's saying, I've got this living water. He's actually saying that you have this spiritual thirst deep within you. And Jesus is saying, by the way, I'm the only one that can actually satisfy that thirst here tonight. Many of you know my story. When I achieved the dreams and aspirations of my life, I was dissatisfied, I was thirsty, I was empty. But when I did achieve them, I was even more thirsty and even more empty. Some of you have already heard me say that. Talisha from NDubs, who's the new X Factor judge, said this on a recent BBC documentary. When I'm up on stage, it's such a mad place to be. You get this massive adrenaline rush, and there's so much energy in the room. But then all of a sudden, you come off the stage, and it's like a huge come down. You get left with this feeling of emptiness. You go back into your hotel room, sit on the bed, look out the window, and that's it. I end up feeling quite lonely. Remarkable, isn't it? In Brighton, I believe there's lots of people that are like this. I was one of them. On the outside, I looked happy and satisfied, but on the inside, I was empty. The person that has salvation through Jesus Christ as a free offer of grace, well, the opposite is true. On the outside, it seems that no matter how much junk, how much stuff is thrown at them and dumped on them, on the inside, it's like a spring welling up to eternal life that you can't stop. Now, I don't know if you know much about wells and springs, but you can brick up a well and it will potentially run dry. But you try throwing stuff and junk on a spring, it will never brick, it will never dry up. It will just keep on going on and on and on. You know, the person that has salvation, that's what it's like. It's like this spring of living water that's inside of them, welling up to eternal life. What a promise from Jesus. Lord of the Rings and Gandalf, one of the little hobbits, sees that Gandalf is upset. And it says, then he looked deeper at Gandalf. And he said this, in the wizard's face, he saw only lines of care and sorrow. But underneath there was a great joy, a fountain of mirth, enough to set a kingdom laughing. Oh, glory. On the outside, Brightonians look satisfied. Maybe you're feeling that way even tonight. You're kind of putting on a brave face, but deep down you know there's an emptiness that you can't resolve. The reverse is true when you get this salvation by sheer grace. There's a joy
enough to set a kingdom laughing. Salvation is free. Salvation satisfies. The third point that I want to make is that, well, salvation, it's a process. It's a process. You know, there's a moment in time when a person crosses the line of faith and receives this free gift of salvation, absolutely. But it happens ordinarily over a period of time. There's a process leading up to that moment when someone becomes a Christian, they respond and receive this free offer of salvation, and they live in the good of it. It's ordinarily, of course, a process. And the way, by the way, that Jesus handles different people at different stages in the Bible within that process, well, you clearly see that. So if you look back in John 3, just the chapter just before, the way that Jesus handles, for example, Nicodemus is very different to the way that he handles his conversation with this Samaritan woman. With Nicodemus, the problem is with Nicodemus is that he's relying on his own morality to save himself. Oh, Jesus is loving, but way more direct. He says to Nicodemus, Nicodemus, in effect, your morality, it counts for nothing for your salvation. You must be born again. You have to rethink everything that you've ever been taught in your life. He was a massive religious leader of the day, huge, really relying on his own morality for salvation. And Jesus is saying, Nicodemus, you must be born again. I'm going to get you to rethink everything. And of course, what Jesus is doing by being very direct, well, he's challenging his pride. But he's kind of not like that with this woman. He's being much more nurturing, loving and direct, but much more nurturing along the way. Of course he is. Why? Because, well, she's already aware of her mistakes. Her friends have disappeared. Have you ever found that? Look, listen, when someone is at the very top of their game, in their career, financially, the perfect family, everything is going so well. Have you noticed the amount of friends that seem to flock around you? But when suddenly you make a few mistakes, and suddenly your career starts to go down the pan, or financially you go under, or something happens like that, have you noticed that your friends that you thought were friends start to disappear and reject you one by one? On the surface, it looks like they're your best buddy. But underneath, one by one, they've left you. And that's where Jesus, through his perfect timing, comes to this woman, already aware of her mistakes, and comes to bring gracious, good news. That's something that we need to be thinking about, isn't it? That people are far more open to spirituality, to the meaning of life, when suddenly a few mistakes have been had. Life wasn't what it was before. I just got a sense that maybe there's even some of you that are looking back on your life with nostalgia. My life was far better back then that it is today, and you just can't get your head around it. Forgive me, but I don't know. Whatever it might be, you were in that perfect relationship, or your family's gone down the drain, or mum and dad have left, or one of them's passed away. Life just doesn't seem what it used to be before. You need some good news. And that's what Jesus is bringing in here. In the midst of pain, in the midst of difficulties, in the midst of suffering, right in the midst of her, he's bringing some gracious good news into her. Career. I've made some few mistakes, and Danielle Westbrook, if you've seen Danielle Westbrook this week on the Lorraine Kelly show, now a lot of people think that I watch Lorraine Kelly during the week. I just want to let you know I don't. Honestly, I don't. Or whatever, okay, Steve. But I honestly don't. But anyway, she was on there during the week, and she kind of was reported on this. If you want to check out this story, it's quite remarkable. Go on, do a Google search, check out YouTube. She's on there. Here's someone that was at the top of her game, career-wise, financially, in EastEnders, obviously. And And then suddenly she reports that regardless of this incredible fame that she was now getting, there was a deep emptiness in her side, inside, and she turned to a 400-pound-per-day cocaine habit. She spiraled out of control. What happened was, well, her friends left her, and she became a bit of a laughing stock. Not just her career was down the tubes, but as you know, much of her nose under here kind of disappeared, if you remember. And it was blurted all over the tabloids. It was embarrassing for her. Terribly horrific time. And what happened was she got married. Someone invited her to church. And she said, I only went to church for weddings and funerals. And she said, I thought that I was well past Jesus ever wanting anything to do with me and saving me. But she said, he has. Check out the story. It's incredible. And now what she's doing is she's going around her EastEnders friends and she's sharing this good news that how her life has been transformed and changed from the inside out. Isn't that amazing? You see, when we're on the top of our game, we very rarely will question the meaning of life. But when we've made a few mistakes along the way, there's somehow a bit of more openness there to receive what Jesus really wants to say to you. Well, he's kind of a mouthpiece, maybe even speaking here tonight, inviting you to respond to him. So we learn that, okay? So very different approaches. Some on top of their game, made a few mistakes. The timing of it, Jesus brings it in, and that's something that we need to be thinking out too. But let me ask you this question. What this says to me is the importance of being right there in the thick of it with your friends and neighbors. Let me ask you this question. If your neighbor was going through a similar type of crisis, would you know? How close to them are you as a Christian friend to them? Would you know? Would you know? You see, this stuff about telling others about Jesus Christ is more than giving somebody a personal tract and then 6 months later will you never see them again. Are you saying to me, Phil, that you're against personal tracts? No, as you know. I printed thousands of them. But what I am actually saying is the importance here is to be amongst community as believers. When that crisis moment comes, as it was for every one of us, there was someone there to comfort and to bring some good news. Are you right there, right in the thick of community? Or is it that there's a kind of just a superficial level of relationship with your neighbor? That's what I wanted to say on that particular subject. So, hold on, here we go. Someone needs to bring comfort and good news. And the way that Jesus draws out this conversation, well, is remarkable. Questions, as Phil Moore said a few weeks ago, about finding out more about them rather than about you is going to be really important. But the way that Jesus draws this woman into conversation to her, leading her to salvation, well, he uses picture language. She needs to hear good news, not condemn. She needs to be convicted of what the stuff that she's been going on in her life, but she needs to be hearing some gracious good newsing. Of course she does. And that's what Jesus is doing. He's bringing in some delicious picture language of good news stuff. If you only knew the gift of God. This water that I give you, you'll never be thirsty again. In fact, it will be a spring welling up inside of you to eternal life. So let's be clear here. We need to be there right in the midst of community, helping people when people have made mistakes, getting right in there and giving them good news. But picture language here alongside questions to really help draw that conversation is what brings this woman to salvation ultimately in the end. But there does come a point where Jesus does bring, eventually at some point in the process, conviction. There has to be. You know, this woman wasn't necessarily looking for salvation as such. So Jesus needs to show her that the very things that she was trusting in him, well, were leaving her empty and dissatisfied and thirsty. So what does Jesus do? He tells her to go and get her husband. I haven't got a husband. No, the man that you're living with now is not your husband. What's Jesus doing? He's highlighting that one thing that this woman is building her meaning and significance of life upon. It's relationships. It's men. It's sex. He's highlighting that. He's saying to her, these are the very things that you're going to, one after the after the other. And ultimately, by going after relationships other than me as your central source of life, will lead to emptiness and a deep thirst. Let me ask this question. What is that thing in your life that you're going after that's more important even than Jesus Christ? You're going after one relationship, after the next, after the next, because of your constant need for acceptance and approval. That could be the very thing that Jesus is even highlighting to you tonight. If only I could be significant, if only I could be secure and safe, maybe I could find it in relationships, in men. But what Jesus is saying to this woman is, look, these men, one after the other, it's going wrong. And they're going to let you down. And they're mortal. And all this kind of stuff. Or maybe is it your career that is the most important thing in your life right now? You go to work really, really early. You come home really, really late. And you don't see your family that much. And your relationship with your family is being strained. Gracious good newsing, bringing comfort to where we've made the mistakes, sure. But surely there comes a place when we need to just pinpoint what's that thing that you're going to to fulfill the meaning and significance of your life? What is it? I'm only somebody if I have a career. I'm only somebody if somebody loves me. I'm only somebody if I get the best possible grades that I can get at university. And you're so driven and so stressed out. You know it's left you empty and thirsty, and you can't reconcile it. What Jesus Christ is saying tonight is, look, I'm the only one that can fulfill your deep need for meaning and significance and fulfill the deep thirst and hunger that you have in your life. Are you saying to me then, Phil, that career is wrong? Relationships are wrong? No, they're a gift from God. But when they become your all in all, the most important thing in your life, Jesus says, they will lead you thirsty and empty. Come to him. Respond to him. Even tonight, I pray that you would. That he'll fill that emptiness. He'll put a spring in you, welling up to eternal life. That's the third point that I want to make. The last point that I want to make. It's a process. It's free. It satisfies. It's a process. Lastly, how is salvation ultimately received? And this is the last point I want to make. The reason why I'm up here sharing this stuff about Jesus Christ is because of what he achieved for me upon the cross. That's how Jesus is able to offer to every person in this room his free gift of salvation. He's earned it for you. That's the reason why Jesus is able to offer this salvation to this woman. Because a little bit later on down the line, he's going to go where? To the cross. You know, every time in the book of John where Jesus refers to his hour, the time is coming and has now come, in John, John is always referring to Jesus' death. And that's the very reason why Jesus Christ can look at this woman and say to her, despite everything that you've ever done in your life, I still love you. I'm going to die for you. You know, some of you have heard me share this story, but in the Kingfisher movie, it stars Amanda Plummer and Robin Williams. And Robin Williams, his life's a mess. He's really down on himself. And Amanda Plummer, she's down on herself. Her life's a mess. And she's really clumsy and clumsy, and they go out on a date together, and it goes as well as it could possibly go. And at the end of it, Robin Williams turns to Amanda Plummer and says, "Can I see you again?" And she says, "I never want to see you for the rest of my life." And he said, "Why?" And she said, "Well, if you really got to know what I was really like, you would hate me. And I can't handle that kind of rejection, so I never want to see you again." Robin Williams says to Amanda Plummer, "You're mistaken. I've been watching you from a distance. I know that you're really clumsy and that you're really klutzy. I know that you're really down on yourself and that you've got no friends and that you're horribly shy. But I've seen all this and I still love you." She turns to him and says, "Are you for real?" And it completely and utterly transforms her. Jesus Christ looks around a room exactly like this and sees you and I at our absolute worst and says, "I still love you. I'm going to die for you." Let me make this crystal clear about what Jesus has done on the cross. On the cross, Jesus Christ died in your place to pay the just penalty for your sin so that you could be forgiven and free to have a relationship with God. That's it in a nutshell. Justice and mercy fulfilled in the same stroke through Jesus' death upon the cross. Really important for Brightonians to know that, of course. It's not just God sweeping our sin under the carpet. There's a price that has to be paid. Justice and mercy together. Wow, that means he's paid the price so that you don't have to. Scandalous in many ways, isn't it? You know, I won't tell you the full story, but I've just recently taken on somebody else's debt for them. A friend of mine knows about this. And I kind of did it, but I did it a bit begrudgingly and a bit moany. Just want you to know that Jesus Christ is not at all like that tonight. He looks at your debt and says, "There's joy set before me. I want to clear it. I can't wait to." You see, the problem is that every one of us are in debt, but there's not any person in this room that can clear your own debt because you're all in a debit situation like me. And no one else can bail you out because their bank account is overdrawn as well. Jesus Christ is the only one who's in a credit situation that can clear your debt. That's why this good news of gospel of salvation is totally free, but it's only free to the person that responds. It's an invitation. The title of my message tonight was "The Offer of Salvation." So salvation is received to the person that responds. And it's totally free. Oh, you're starting to sound a bit like a salesman now, Phil. Well, it is. Because I'm just explaining what Jesus has said here. If you only knew the gift of God. Many of you are so thirsty and empty. Jesus needs to put in you this well, this spring, welling up to eternal life. But he can only do that to the person that responds. Are you willing to do that? I'm going to end with this, if I may. Because I think this last point teaches us about these kind of two things that I've been doing at the same time. About how Jesus is inviting anybody in this room who's never yet responded to his offer of salvation to respond, but also to Christians too. Because something dramatic happens in this Samaritan woman. She makes the response to salvation, and her heart is so transformed, she goes back to the town, the people that have most rejected her. She doesn't care because she's been given a new self. She's not interested in people rejecting her anymore. It doesn't matter. All she cares about is wanting to tell other people about Jesus Christ. Did you know part of this incredible salvation plan in your and my life is that Jesus may well send you back to the people that have most rejected you. I've been finding that. Patcham Fawcett is where I grew up. I'm a Brighton born and bred guy. Okay? No Christian home, no Christian background, no Christian friends, nothing. How I got up here, God only knows, literally. And what I've been finding is, you know, Patcham Fawcett, I found, actually, since moving to secondary school, was the hardest, loneliest, and the time where I suffered probably most rejection in my life. But one by one, Jesus, through Facebook, has been bringing many of these guys from Patcham Fawcett into my path. And I've been telling them the good news about Jesus. Why? Because rejection doesn't matter to me anymore. I've got a new self. So therefore, as a Christian, you can go back to any people group that have rejected you or hurted you or betrayed you because you've got a new self. This is not just a bit of forgiveness on the side. It's a transformation of the heart. It's a brand new identity. And the way I don't care about performance, I don't care now what people think of me. All I care about is wanting to tell them this good news about Jesus. Don't you? Don't you? Don't be surprised if Jesus starts to take you back to the place where you were most rejected in your life, because he wants to do some training and help in your life too. Oh, and by the way, just to let you know, for invitations, because I actually think the only way people are genuinely going to get saved, we can pray for Brightonians until we're blue in the face on our Thursday morning prayer meetings and our Saturday morning prayer meetings. But if no one invites them to hear the gospel, the good news, they won't get saved. We can't think. Now, some will come through the doors as a result of our prayers, but it's prayer and invitation that is going to do it, to hear it. Now, I've been out there and I've been chatting to some Brightonians, and remarkably, as I've been finding this, they've been saying to me, do you know, Phil, they've said, I found in most cases, in almost every case, Brightonians aren't hostile to the gospel. They just remain, well, what does it mean for me? But when I said to them, if you got a meaningful invitation to find out more about Christianity, to find out more of the church, would you come? And you know, in almost every case, they said they would. But we've got to invite, haven't we? This is a gospel that is a gift, that satisfies. It's a process, but is received through his death on the cross. And that's why I also want to invite, for those of you who haven't yet responded to this gospel, this good news, to make your response. There's emptiness, there's a thirst, the stuff that you're going after that you know deep down is not giving you the peace. And Jesus said this, whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. The water I give them will be a spring in them, welling up to eternal life. This salvation is only received once we respond. And that's what I'm going to do in just a moment. The band are going to come up right now. They're going to lead us in a song. I'm going to get off stage. I'm going to come back up on stage. And then I'm going to lead you in a prayer to make that response to Jesus Christ. Thanks so much for listening. Guys, over to you.